I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about movies, the year's best and the year's worst, with film critics Matthew Soucy of Film Sociology here on WFYI, and Ed Johnson-Ott of Nuvo. We'll talk about the great, the good, the bad, and the never should have been made. If you want to talk about the movies you loved and the movies you hated in 2012, this is your chance. Please join the conversation by calling toll-free 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I'm John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about movies. Movies in 2012, the best, the worst, the never should have been made, the great. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Fortunate to have a couple of old friends who've been on the program several times with us today. Matthew Soucy, who is part of the WFYI family here. He's the host of Film Sociology. Matthew, welcome to the program.
Hi, John.
I should say, welcome back.
Well, it's nice to be on this side of the desk.
It is. And Ed Johnson-Ott, who is Nuvo's film critic. Ed, welcome back to the program.
It's nice to be here, John. Good to see you.
It's good to see you. Well, let's start, I'll tell you what, we'll start on a good note. It's a season to try to be happy. So rather than starting with the bad and the never should have been made, why don't we start with what you guys think were the best films so far of 2012. Why don't we take them in reverse order? We'll build some tension here so that you're starting. Do you have top tens?
Ed?
Uh-huh.
Do you have top tens? Could you start with number 10 and we'll work our way up?
Sure.
And why?
Well, because you said to do it that way.
No, the list,
why?
Ed.
And why? Why you think they were so
I was being
good.
Humorous.
That was
I
good.
I know, I'm
with you.
It worked.
My 10th place is Zero Dark Thirty. No, it's not. I'm sorry. I read the wrong part. Okay. That's coming up, though.
All right. This is building anticipation. It's foreshadowing.
Ang Lee's Life of Pi is my number 10.
Why? What? I haven't seen that one yet, so.
It's so ambitious. He's much less reserved than, I mean, he's been unfortunately reserved in some of his films. This time, he's more open. The film is unique. And it's for somebody that sees movies too much, it's just a treat to see something unique. And it made me think, the ending had me curious, thinking about it all the way home. It was, and beautiful, visually beautiful.
Yes.
I'm going to say,
I think what Ed's saying is that Ang Lee's, a lot of his films have dealt with relationships and the relationships in the society that it happens in. If you mm-hmm. think of Sense and Sensibility, Brokeback Mountain, Lust Caution, The Wedding Banquet, those pictures. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he opens himself up on this. And Life of Pi also made my list.
Where was it on your list?
It's actually number two.
Number two.
So we
jumped way ahead.
My top three have something in common, which I'll get to later. But yes, he's right about it. It's ambitious. It's a spiritual journey with the lead character. I think the trailers kind of pose it as, kind of show it off as just stuck on the boat with Tiger movie, and it's much more than that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a combination where it looks fantastic because it's wall to wall CG and mm-hmm. the animals are CG, but you're enthralled with it's actually CG used for good, not for evil. My favorite first time of noticing Ang Lee did CG work was in Sense and Sensibility because he wanted mm-hmm. extra clouds in the sky. That's what you'd use CG for. Don't put it in Michael Bay's hands.
Yes.
But it's an engaging story. It's a riveting story, and it's an inspiring story. of this guy's journey and what happens when he's faced with the challenge of being stuck on said boat with said tiger. So,
and what was your number 10?
My number 10 was Cabin in the Woods, which turned out to be one of the biggest surprises of the year. It's a horror film with a great twist, and even though it's been out for months and it's out on Blu-ray, I don't want to give away too much, but it does tap into when people yell at a horror movie, at a whether it's mm-hmm. good or bad. It's got the stock characters. It's got the lunkhead jock. It's got the woman who, you know, apparently cannot be fully dressed when sneaking down the hallway to look what the noise is. You know, it's a bunch of kids that go out into the said title, and they start dying one by one, but there's a reason for it, and it involves Richard Jenkins and Bradley Whitford, and it's so smartly written. And I think this does what I think the Scream franchise wanted to do, and I was not a fan of even the first Scream film. Okay. So if you like horror films but you like to pick at them, this is the film for you.
Did this one make your list as well, Ed? Or
I didn't see that film.
Oh, okay. And I should say we've gotten a couple of messages from Facebook already from listeners named Brian and Charlie, who agree that one of their top movies of the year was Argo.
Yes.
And then Brian also says Silver Linings Playbook.
That's going to come in very prominently later with me.
In your list? Okay.
And Argo's going to come in on mine.
Okay. If you want to join the conversation about movies today, you can call us at 1-866-476-3881. You can shoot us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or, as Brian and Charlie did, you can connect with us on Facebook at WFYI. Well, I'll stick with Matthew here and take you to your number 9 pick.
My number 9 is opening next week. It's the musical Les Mis Rob. It's an epic musical. It is directed by Tom Hooper, who gave us The King's Speech, and he gives us a combination of the big sweeping epic musical that a lot of people like and dislike, but we also have very intimate moments. I mean, really extreme close-up moments. There's a lot of talk already, of course, about Anne Hathaway's performance, which I think, regardless of how one feels about the film or musicals in general, she puts in a really strong, albeit very brief, moment in the film. Actors who sing, it's done live and it shows. Mm-hmm. And Anne Hathaway, I think, is the best example of that. So, you know, not every studio is doing a big budget musical like they were in the 60s and mm-hmm. 70s. So this is my one musical this year, and I really enjoyed it.
And is it on your list as well, Ed?
I am not a fan of movies where actors sing every line that they speak.
He's been waiting to do that all week.
All right. I do that a lot.
I'm glad I fed him here. Fed the beast. All right. In terms of you, what's your number 9 film?
My number 9 is The Raid: Redemption. I don't remember what country it's from. Do you?
And sadly, no.
Oh, it's a foreign film somewhere in Asia, and it's...
Sorry to our Asian listeners.
Did I say that?
Yes, but no, the fact that we don't know exactly where.
Oh, yes, yeah.
We pinpointed it to a continent.
There we go.
Yeah. But it's the most pure action film I think I've ever seen, and as far as edge-of-your-seat action, oh, goodness.
Yeah.
It's just amazing, you know, the visceral feel of the film. And they're following the video game template, but it doesn't matter. They do it so remarkably well.
Is that on your list as well?
It should be, but I actually, there's an action film that's a little higher up on my list, but for different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay. And I know we're two members of the Indiana Film Journalists Association, and we named The Raid: Redemption as the best foreign film of the year.
Okay, and I'll stay with you, Ed. Your number 8 film?
Argo. Ben Affleck and. It's just top-notch movie. I mean, I have one little quibble with it at the very, very end, a little thing he threw in for Holly, just to add excitement where I didn't think he needed to. But it's a tiny quibble. It's just an excellent film.
We've gotten a comment on Facebook from a listener named Wayne who said, liked the film as well, but thought it downplayed Ken Taylor, the ambassador from Canada's role. Is in terms of film criticism, is that something you keep in mind, is whether it is accurate. Obviously, we're seeing some of that right now with Zero Dark 30, too.
Right.
Some of those concerns, Matthew.
I think if anything, if a film makes you go and do research on something, mm-hmm. now I did not study up ahead of time watching a film like Argo, but if it does make you want to go and check that out, now I don't know if this comment was, you know, this person knew this ahead of time or went and found out about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, either way, I think that's mission accomplished for the film itself.
Mm-hmm.
Argo also made my list.
Where was it for you?
It's number six, okay. And I kind of put it
Ed's
in the
anticipating
same,
you here.
I put it in the same category as Apollo 13, in which you know how it turns out, but the fact that you're still on the edge of your seat, even, you know, especially in, yeah. I don't think we're giving away much, but once it gets to the airport, it's really tense.
Yeah.
It's really tense. My only quibble, and it's not about the film itself, is the fact that that film is rated R because of the language, because there is a line, and I'm not going to, obviously I can't say it, but it's a quip on the title.
Yeah.
And they use it one too many times for the MPAA, and it got an R rating, and this film does not deserve that.
No.
It's a PG-13. It's a mature thriller, suspense action, and it doesn't need to be that way.
They had some of that issue, obviously, with the King's Speech.
Well, there's that's another ridiculous.
And Bully.
Yeah, Bully's another one. So,
yeah.
You know what? I'm gonna guess your kids have heard it before.
Yeah.
So don't blame the movie. It's not their fault.
Now, as far as researching films, I don't have a problem with accuracy as long as we're sticking to the spirit of the incident. I'll keep this very short, but Cinderella Man, Ron Howard, is my pet peeve because to make the story more dramatic, he took Max Baer and turned him from a man who had one of his opponents die in the ring, and it affected him very hard for the rest of his life, and he made him an arrogant creep who was bragging and about the death and boasting about getting this guy's wife. I mean, he besmirched a family name, you know, and that's not okay.
Yeah.
That's not okay.
Yeah, you could fictionalize the character then or create
something
else if that's what you really needed to drive the story. Next on your list, Matthew.
Number eight is, for me, The Sessions.
Okay.
And there's a really good double feature, which I'll get to in a little bit. This is one with John Hawkes, and it's based on a true story. And it's a poet who has polio, and he basically spends most of his time in an iron lung, and he decides that at the age of 38 that he wants to lose his virginity. So he hires a sex therapist, or sex surrogate, I should say, played by Helen Hunt.
Mm-hmm.
William H. Macy is in the film as well as a priest who talks to the John Hawkes character. And I want to say that this film and Hope Springs, the Tommy Lee Jones, mm-hmm. Meryl Streep comedy, they tackle subjects about sexuality with older people and handle it in a mature way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, we live in a world where if some, like Waking Ned Divine, if you're over the age of 50 mm-hmm. and you're shedding your clothes, this apparently has to be a punchline.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the case with The Sessions. It's an intimate story, and it handles the subject of sexuality in a mature way, not a snark, not a giggle, and really strong performances from especially Hunt and Hawks.
And The Sessions is my number seven film.
Oh, so you guys are close. Your number seven?
My number seven is Moonrise Kingdom, the latest Wes Anderson film set in the 60s where you have a boy and a girl around age 12 who run away together. He runs away from his scout campsite, and she runs away from her Anderson-esque parents. And there's, of course, a lot of growth. You know, he always has a really strong cast. In this case, Bill Murray, Frances McDormand, Edward Norton, Bruce Willis, and of course, the adults act less mature than the children themselves.
And Ed, what is your number six film?
My number six is The Perks of Being a Wallflower.
Oh.
It's the best high school movie I've seen in a couple decades, and one of the best coming of ages story I've ever seen. Absolutely charming.
I'm with him on it. It didn't make my list, but I wholly agree with that. I mean, I think John Hughes, I know the man's no longer with us, but I think his films have been vastly overrated, and it probably didn't help that I was a teenager when his films came out. But yeah, spot on about the unlikely friendships that one gets in high school, especially.
I believe these people.
Exactly.
I believe them.
Yeah, they're not TV created. They're not heightened high school characters, and they're not 35-year-olds playing high school.
Yes, that was nice. They didn't look old.
Characters either.
And Ed Johnson, your number five film?
My number five is my screen went out on my
tablet. Well, it's, while you're doing that, well, I say my number six film is Argo.
Okay.
My number five film is Zero Dark Thirty.
Okay. So is mine. So is mine.
So you guys are in agreement. We can talk about that real quickly.
I mean, everything we said about Argo times two.
Yeah, and this is a film, of course, it's directed by Catherine Bigelow, who gave us The Hurt Locker. This is a procedural.
This is The Search for Bin Laden.
This is The Search for Bin Laden film.
Leading up to the raid.
I'd put this in the same category as the underappreciated David Fincher film Zodiac and All the President's Men, where it's about the procedure. Yes, you get an exciting last half hour, but Jessica Chastain carries this film. She's amazing in it. And it's trying, you know, getting through the bureaucratic red tape in order to get this task done.
And it sounds like that you both put it as, even though you know the outcome here, it's something where it maintains the suspense.
It's thrilling.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. My guests are Matthew Soucy and Ed Johnson Ott. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about movies. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We have gotten a comment from a listener named Dalton via Facebook that says, Brad Pitt's performance in Killing Them Softly was one of the strongest efforts of the year. Agree? Disagree? I'll start with you, Ed Johnson-Ott.
I have a great amount of respect for Brad Pitt. He was spot on in the movie. There's a lot to argue about on the movie itself, but he was excellent in it. He usually is, though.
I have to admit, I have not seen that one. I would like to because it's also the same filmmaker directed Pitt in the assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, which I really enjoyed a great deal.
Assassination is my best film of the year it came out.
When that came out?
That
was
amazing.
So I think, if it's still in theaters, give that film a chance.
No, it's gone.
Is it gone already?
Gone. Yeah.
Oof. Yeesh.
And we're at the point now where we left off our list, I think, at number four, right?
Yeah,
building our ways up. I'll go with Matthew.
Well, all right, number four, I cheated because there's a tie, and we have to do at least one of these every now and then. This is what I call my dark comedy Texas double feature.
How do you have a tie with yourself?
Why does every kid get a trophy in a juice box at the soccer tournament?
All right.
My Texas dark comedy double feature, Richard Linklater's Bernie and William Friedkin's Killer Joe. Both happen to star Matthew McConaughey.
Nice choices.
Who had the comeback of the year, by the way, between these two films and Magic Mike. Bernie stars Jack Black, and another based on a true story, which I actually believe and actually care. Every other film says they're based on a true story or inspired by a true story, and you know that doesn't do anything for me anymore. But it's a story about a funeral home employee who winds up spending more than quality time with an aging widow played by Shirley MacLaine, and she winds up dead. Did he do it? Didn't he do it? And Matthew McConaughey is the district attorney who is on the hunt for that. But it captures a small Texas town, and what's wonderful about the film is that you don't know who are actors and who aren't when it comes to this. And I think there's even more visual punchlines in this film than in Moonrise Kingdom, which and that's kind of Wes Anderson's bread and butter is his visual punchlines. Killer Joe is not for everybody.
No.
It is an NC-17 Texas noir about one of the lead sap in film noir is not that bright, and that's Emil Hirsch and his even dumber dad played by Thomas Hayden Church.
Mm-hmm.
And they want to hire a hitman who's also a sheriff played by McConaughey to bump off the mother so they can get an inheritance. And, of course, things go horribly, horribly wrong. You see a lot more of things like Gina Gershon and see more use of Kentucky Fried Chicken than anybody ever really needs, but it doesn't let up on the dark aspect of this, and there's even there's a really uncomfortable moment where McConaughey winds up taking a stepsister, the stepsister of Emil Hirsch's character, as collateral.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a wonderfully delicious, dark, not-for-everybody film, and I really enjoyed it.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Jimmy who says that The Raid Redemption is an Indonesian film directed by Gareth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, thank you very much,
appreciate
Jimmy,
that.
For completing the record here for us. Ed Johnsonat, your number four.
Django Unchained.
Oh.
There will be a lot of argument about this film.
Why is that?
Because it's Quentin Tarantino indulging himself.
Mm-hmm. So it's a Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah, I was in the mood for what he was doing, and I had a wonderful time. The film is long enough that you could fly to Dallas on a on standby. But I mean, it's uber violent. It's filled with more blood gushing from the human body than I think the human body holds. Obscene and repellent words all over the place. Mm-hmm. It all fits what he's doing. It's a tribute to everything from spaghetti westerns to Blazing Saddles, really. And Christoph Waltz is sensational in it. Jamie Foxx does. He's an icon. He's supposed to be in the. He occupies that spot very well. It's just it's going to turn a lot of people off. It opens on Christmas Day, which somehow
perfect.
Still seems, you know.
I'm going on Christmas Day, because that's what you do on a holiday.
Well, and I'll stick with you, Ed, for the number three film on your list.
All right. Moonrise Kingdom.
Moonrise Kingdom.
And I've been a Wes Anderson fan of almost everything he's done. He did Fantastic
Mr. Fox.
And
yes.
It was just a remarkable movie. It was like, mm-hmm. as far as the whole diorama approach to filmmaking, it seemed like it was possibly his ultimate. But and it was with in stop motion animation form, and it was like, what can he do after this? Well, he's still doing the diorama thing to a degree, but he kind of grew up a little bit in this film.
Mm-hmm.
It's richer, there's more depth to the characters, and it's just a fine, fine movie.
And I know there's a lot of people that he's kind of a polarizing filmmaker, and some are kind of turned off by the kind of too cool for school attitude that his films can have. And I think, Rushmore and Royal Tenenbaums have those. Both films that I enjoy a great deal. But yeah, that tone hasn't turned me off at all.
No.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, Matthew, we're coming back to you. You cheated on your number four film, so
yeah,
where
I did,
are we
I
at
did.
Number three?
Number three for me is Skyfall. I really, really enjoy it.
My son's listening. He's
and,
very
and
happy right now.
And it's
now.
Not just one of the best Bond films. And I don't have a list because I'm married and I have a child and I have a job, several jobs, so I don't have to do that. But what Skyfall does is gives you a good balance of new stuff to move the story along, to move the Bond franchise along, and just enough old nods, homages. Mm-hmm. There's some characters that return. And it's so much fun. And it really helps that you have, one, Daniel Craig is really taken into the role. This is his third time playing Bond. You have a really acclaimed director like Sam Mendes. You have a cinematographer like Roger Deakins. And you have a really strong cast. Judi Dench, Ralph Fiennes, Albert Finney. I think I'm saying Ben Whishaw is in this as well.
Mm-hmm.
And
the villain.
And yeah, Javier Bardem, he is my favorite Bond villain.
He's a great
one. It's not just a rehash of his Oscar-winning performance in No Country for Old Men. No Country for Old Men, he's amazing as a soulless killing machine. In this film, we know why he became a soulless character. And it's much more than just Bond and booze and girls and getting the job done.
Well, and I'd seen several of the other films we talked about, but this one, maybe because my son has become a Bond fanatic and I've now seen it five times with him.
Wow.
Father's love.
Are you still enjoying it after the 45th
time?
Yeah.
Well, and what it is you notice things in it. And to some degree, I don't think I'm giving anything away here to say what they've done is deconstruct Bond and then reconstruct him.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a fascinating, it's sort of an explanation of how this character could become what he is. It completes the arc from Casino Royale in
exactly.
a lot of ways. The other thing I find fascinating about the film is that people ask me after I'd seen it a couple of times or whatever, the standard question, you know, who's the Bond woman in it? And the answer in this case is Judi Dench.
Yeah.
That's the relationship that matters. Yep. That's the one that you follow. Ed Johnsonat, your number three film.
I think
Moonrise
we're
Kingdom
two,
is your number.
Right?
Yeah. So
yeah,
we're
number two. I flip back and forth on this all the time. What do you think, Matt? Should I go with what we voted for originally, or should I go with what I feel like today?
Mm-hmm. It's your world, Ed. So we're just visiting.
All right, I'm going to go with what I feel like today. Number two is Safety Not Guaranteed,
okay,
which with the Indiana Film Critics Association.
Film Journalists
Association, yeah. That was our pick for best movie of the year. And it was my pick until I looked at the list just a minute ago. I go back and forth.
Okay.
Yeah.
But Silver Linings are, jeez.
So it's all right.
I'm deconstructing.
That's all right.
Okay. I set you up for that one. So it's my fault, really.
Safety Not Guaranteed. An ad appears in a little alternative paper that says, wanted someone to go back in time with me. This is not a joke. You'll get paid when we get back. Must bring own weapons. Safety not guaranteed. I have only done this once before. That was a real ad that appeared somewhere. The filmmakers took the ad and decided to spring from there. A reporter and two interns are sent to check this out to do a color story for an alternative publication. And it's what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah,
it's a little movie.
It is a little movie. This one didn't make my list, but I also enjoyed it because it took a storyline that we've kind of seen before. The is this person crazy or not?
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as you go along, you find out more about the subject, the guy who took the ad out. But you also get a rich character study of not just the interns who kind of, especially one who gets fairly close to the subject matter, but also we have the lead reporter who's kind of resting on his laurels. He's a bit of a jerk, and
yeah,
but he it's more than just being the kind of jerky superior character or superior officer, and in this case superior reporter character pushing the interns around. It's a really nice little story that I'm glad is getting a little more notice.
And he has his own agenda, and it's a valid storyline. It's not just a secondary line.
Correct. Yeah, it doesn't feel tagged on.
And it stars Aubrey Plaza. Mm-hmm. From Parks and Recreation, who's so wonderful, and Mark Duplass, who's in every other film that's made this independent, but he's very, very good.
Yes.
And I know because we jumped around, we got your...
My number two film is Life of Pi, which we talked about.
Okay. So who wants to break the tension here and go with the number one?
Silver Linings Playbook. There's Ed Johnsonat. My one for today. And again, that's been flipping from number one to two, but what a movie. It's just... Remember Terms of Endearment or Broadcast News, mm-hmm. those kind of movies where even if you didn't like a big part of it, you knew you were sinking your teeth into a big, juicy, substantial movie.
Mm-hmm.
That's what Silver Linings Playbook is.
Mm-hmm.
It deals with mental illness. It manages to find humor without trivializing mental illness or the characters. The characters are true to themselves and to the illness that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
It morphs gradually into rom-com land, mm-hmm. but it does so in a way that is perfectly okay with me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, the performance, Robert De Niro was in it, and he's acting. You know, and Bradley Cooper shows, although I never believed for a second that he lost a large amount of weight, I still believe the character. He's a person that he's just got out of, 8 months in the psychiatric hospital.
Right.
And... He's charismatic but scary, in a genuine sense. If you had a person that's been suffering from something like this and came home, you believe he's that guy. And then Jennifer Lawrence
yep. Mm-hmm.
She enters in as another psychiatric patient, and again, just marvelous performances.
And it's
Matthew Sosa.
What's funny, I have a term that I use quite often called the psychotic romantic comedies, and these are like every other one that Kate Hudson has appeared in,
mm-hmm.
or Brittany Murphy when she was alive. But these are because if normal looking people acted the way Kate Hudson and Matthew McConaughey act in something mm-hmm. like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days or Julia Roberts in My Best Friend's Wedding, they would need to be put into a hospital. Well, here's the flip on it, where these two were in a hospital, they do have deep psychological problems, and I cared more more about this couple than all of the rom-coms that have been out in the last 10 years.
And in so many films that deal with mental illness, the whole point of view is they're wiser, really, than the rest of us. Well, that's not true here. They're people that fit in with all the other people, and they're dealing with a debilitating mental illness. You know, they're not made into icons. It's just really nice.
Or dehumanized in some fashion.
Yeah, and it's so funny.
It is funny. And it's David O. Russell, who did The Fighter and Flirting with Disaster and Three Kings. Yes. So well done.
And your number one?
My number one is Beasts of the Southern Wild. And this is if, I guess, if Dickens lived on the bayou. it's the main focus is a seven-year-old girl who lives in a shanty town outside post-Katrina New Orleans. She's living with her dad, whose health is not all great, and a small community of people just living on their own terms. And it's I say Dickensian because they would rather live in the shanty with their own rules and their own ideas and actually go to a shelter that winds up coming into play. But the focus is on this little girl. I don't know if she's I believe the actress was 7 years old. I don't know if she's ever going to do another movie after this or not, but it doesn't matter. It's a really strong, understated performance by a seven-year-old girl. That's not a Disney child. It's not a sitcom kid. You know, there are no black and white decisions that are made in this film, and it's heartbreaking and inspiring at the same time because of the squalor, but being able to live on their own terms. The three films top three: Beast of the Southern Wild, Life of Pi, and Skyfall, all deal with me for me. Dealing with your own mortality in one way, shape, or form, and given three different points of view of dealing with that mortality. And I really, really enjoyed it. And I hope more people get to rent it now that it's out on Blu-ray and DVD.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten a tweet from a listener named Adam who says that Argo was easily the best film of the year. No other has even come close to matching it in any way. And then a listener named Joe takes issue with you, Matthew, says, shame on you, Matt. Catherine Bigelow's best film remains Point Stuff. I think they mean Point Break.
Point Break.
Yeah.
Is that Joe Shearer?
I think it is, yeah, maybe.
Hi, Joe. Yeah. One of our fellow IFJA members, that's great.
Okay, and then another tweet from a listener named Adam saying, Flight, Silver Linings Playbook, and End of Watch were also some of the best of the year. Not sure what order yet.
End of Watch was a really good film. Jake Gyllenhaal and Michael Pena.
David Ayers, who wrote Training Day and Dark Blue and
Police
Hard
Drama,
Times.
Excellent police drama.
Right, and they released that in theaters.
Yes.
So very cool.
And then we've gotten an email from a listener named John who said the best film is Lincoln because it stimulated thought about practical politics in our day. Plugs a book I wrote a few years ago called Emily's Walk. Thank you very much for that, John.
What was the name of the book again?
Emily's Walk.
Is it available on Amazon?
It probably is.
John,
thank you.
John,
do you
want to talk about this on Film Sociology Fridays at 5?
Yeah, and then the worst is Bully, which failed on two levels. First, it did not stimulate the conversations and reforms it promised, and production values were horrible. Poor writing, poor editing are part of the problem, but the most awful was the shaky camera that prompted symptoms in the audience, not unlike motion sickness.
Then don't watch a Bourne film, then.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, although we have referenced Bully earlier in this program. Was it good, bad?
I think it's not perfect. I would have even liked to have seen the filmmakers try to interview said bully or a parent of that, of somebody who has inflicted that onto a kid. But I think it holds a mirror up to what's going on a lot in this country. Obviously, we've talked about it as a nation for the it's become more prominent. But so it's kind of preaching to the choir, maybe, and maybe the wrong people, probably the right people who should be seeing this probably won't. But I still think it's required.
Yeah, who's going to come out and say I want to be a bully?
Yeah,
I
thought it was not nearly what it could have been.
Right.
And
it needed to be.
What did you dislike about it, Ed?
It was it felt like the PTA made it. It just, I mean, it, again, like Matt said, it's preaching to the choir. You know, give me something I can work with. You know, don't just tell me things I already know.
We are talking about the year in movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are film critics Matthew Soucy and Ed Johnsonot. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I'm John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the year in movies. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Matthew Soucy, who is the host of Film Sociology here on WFYI, and Ed Johnsonot, who is Nouveau's film critic.
Oh, John?
Yes.
I'm
please.
Also the proud father of Donald Johnsonot, the most wonderful son in the world. I know he's listening today, and I'll be talking to him the minute this broadcast is finished.
Oh, that's great. That's great. That is great.
Hey, so, Donnie.
We are we're talking about movies, and we've talked so far about the good. And actually, we've gotten a tweet from a listener named Adam, who's obviously listening closely to the show, and says that Moonrise Kingdom was the biggest disappointment by far this year. It speaks to what you guys were talking about, how Wes Anderson is a polarizing
figure. He's a polarizing figure.
Yeah.
A filmmaker, and people either seem to love him or hate him. We've got another also comment question from a listener named Matt that says, just curious from the commenters, Life of Pi was a big favorite, as was the book, but I felt the film missed a chance on Pi's becoming a member of the Islamist religion. Probably only needed to have a conversation with the imam, similar to the priest, but Lee skipped over it too quickly. Wondered if the commenters felt the same way.
I didn't read the book, so I didn't have that to compare.
Yeah, I haven't either.
And that's not, I know, because we've done this show, versions of this show in the past, you guys make the point, we review films.
Yeah,
not
it's
books.
Not. I don't. I can't host book sociology or novel sociology. That's another time in another place.
But it's an interesting question.
Yeah.
What's the especially with a book that was that huge?
Yeah.
Sure.
What obligation do you have to follow the source material? Ed Johnsonot.
None.
No.
I mean, it's the same way that back when I reviewed music, if the artist said something horrific that I disagreed with, I judged him still based on the music he put out.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with movies. I can't judge the source material or who adapted it or whether I like the director or not. It's the movie.
Mm-hmm. Correct. So
yeah, I think it actually in a different context. It
because they're
talking about literature. D.H. Lawrence once said, "Never trust the teller; always trust the tale."
Right.
There you go.
There are adaptations that are strong to the book, and they weren't fun, and there were adaptations that were nothing like the book, and they're The Shining, and they're great. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough call.
Well, let's talk a little bit, real quickly, mm-hmm. about maybe race through. I'll ask you each to give your worst films of the year, and then we'll try to anoint the real stinkers. I'll start with Matthew on this one.
All right. Well, I'm gonna add two because it's just one is it's opening soon and it really bugs me. You talk about biggest disappointment, and that's Judd Apatow's This Is 40, with his wife Leslie Mann and Paul Rudd, who are just spazzing out because they're getting older. They're turning 40. Boo hoo. Mm-hmm. It just really leaves a sour taste as far as, you know, the very first scene is the two of them in a shower, and she winds up complaining when he reveals he took a blue pill, and she says, "I don't want to be married to somebody who takes a blue pill, and I don't want to be the one that works that shops at the old person's clothing store." Well, then don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, and it sets the tone for the rest of the film, and of course it fits the Apatow film. It's about 20-30 minutes too long.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of characters that don't need to be in this, and it's just an unpleasant film about aging when 40 is no big deal.
Mm-hmm.
No big deal. That being said, I still hated Battleship. a really dumb film that has, and it doesn't help that it's named after a board game. If they had called it Navy versus Aliens, it still would be a dumb action film where the kid who is a screw up but rises up very quickly and has to single handedly help out fighting the aliens. And the other thing that this film does is that it features a cameo by surviving members of Pearl Harbor. And they wind up being a part of the plot in the last third of the film. And it feels like, well, if you criticize them, then you must hate America because you dare to criticize, actual Navy veterans. So, real turnoff.
Are those the two worst of the year?
Those are my two.
Okay, Ed.
I disagree on this. This is 40. Okay. And if you read this week's Nouveau News Weekly, there's an article on Judd Apatow where he talks about his editing. And I think it's interesting. And looking at the film in that context, I think you would come up with something different, or at least I came up with something different than Matt's reaction. Okay. For me, the second worst film this year is, well, it's a tie between the film that Tyler Perry made and the film that Tyler Perry starred in.
Alex Cross and Madea's Witness Protection.
Yeah, Madea Goes Hawaiian. And then the worst was That's My Boy, Adam Sandler. Now, I loved Adam Sandler when he was on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. I couldn't stand him in his early films. Then around the time of the one with the little boy.
Big Daddy.
Big Daddy. Mm-hmm. He won me over again. I was with him for a long time. The last two films just been dreadful movies. I mean, even with all the allowances, they're still just dreadful movies.
Mm-hmm. I still like when I'm still one of those guys that likes when somebody like Adam Sandler or Jim Carrey has an actual director, not one of his friends directing him. So yeah, I was a fan of Punch Drunk Love. Yeah. I was a fan of Spanglish. It's something that doesn't feel like you're just turning the camera on and go, just do goofy stuff eight or nine times and we'll take
post 9/11 one he did.
Oh, Rain Over Me.
Yeah. I had moments and it was certainly well intentioned.
Yeah.
And then there's a courtroom finale.
Well, yeah.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. John, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I got in late, I'm sorry, but I can't believe that you didn't have Lincoln among your top four. It just shocked me.
Well, we'll talk about that. Thanks very
Thank
much
you,
for the question, John. Thanks.
I think it's a really good film. There's solid performances from a lot of people. Sally Field's a little shrill for my taste, but one of the things that we've talked about is the film didn't end the way we wanted it to end. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of films that didn't make my list because the ending kind of dropped the ball. And sadly, Lincoln did that.
And Lincoln was 11 on mine, and These lists are so arbitrary.
Yeah.
There just was, all these films were bunched pretty close together, with Safety Not Guaranteed and Silver Linings leaping ahead of the others. But Lincoln very easily would have made my top 10. It was number 11 on the list I'm operating off of right now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine film, except they had a false ending.
Yeah. So,
well, and I also noticed that, this was a year of some pretty big superhero films, and none of those made your lists either.
Really enjoyed enjoyed the Avengers more than I did Dark Knight Rises.
Me too, and Chronicle. Chronicle was an excellent film about a group of teenagers that gets superpowers and what happens, and it's just a really nicely written, smart film.
And then the others, Dark Knight Rises, obviously... I think I've talked with you guys before that you like the Dark Knight.
Enjoyed Dark Knight. I also thought Dark Knight Rises was about a half hour too long. There's a big middle portion where it feels like a Red Dawn, and there was already a Red Dawn remake this year that nobody asked for.
It didn't stick with me the way I thought it would.
No, and I don't think, except for maybe Anne Hathaway, I know it's Christopher Nolan, but it didn't seem like anybody was having as much fun with this film compared to the others.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Rev, welcome to the program. Oops. Rev, welcome to the program. Oops. Well, it looks like I managed to drop Rev here. I apologize for that. Please call back, Rev. In terms of disappointments, films that you were really, really looking forward to, and maybe they weren't awful, or
sure,
terrible. What falls into that category? Matthew Soucy.
I have a couple of lists. There was the duo of Snow White films. There was Mirror Mirror, and then there was Snow White and the Woodsman or Huntsman. Sorry, mm-hmm. but there was one where the one with Julia Roberts, the one that officially made Julia Roberts old in the eyes of Hollywood, and then there's one that officially made Charlize Theron old in the eyes of Hollywood because they're playing the wicked stepmother. I wish that Mirror Mirror had a darker tone compared to what the film. I think the word was that the Mirror Mirror people heard that there was a dark, grown-up Snow White movie already being made with Kristen Stewart and Charlize Theron, so they kind of changed the tone and the look of it. So the guy who directed The Fall and The Cell, and a very visual director, and so I wish they had a little darker tone, and I wish Snow White and the Huntsman just enjoyed themselves more. It was almost like the Kristen Stewart persona. Just, you know, you want to look at it and go, lighten up.
Yeah.
So that's one for me.
And how about two for you, Ed Johnsonot?
I should be ashamed that I had hopes for this, probably, but Total Recall. Mm. After last year, we had Fright Night remade with Colin Farrell. Mm-hmm. And it was a surprise. I mean, it wasn't a great film or even a real good one, but there were a lot of juicy little moments. I enjoyed it almost as much in a different way as I did the original Fright Night. Because of that, I was hopeful about Total Recall with Colin Farrell. Mm-hmm. And the art direction was fine. I mean, it was a ripoff, but it was still very nicely done. And the action kept you interested, but there was nothing new going on here, and there was no characterization. It was just... tiresome.
From the director of Underworld.
I know. I should be apologizing for having hopes for it.
That's all right.
Rev, welcome to the program. Thank you for calling back.
Thank you. Regarding this conversation, it seems like you're missing one kind of review item, namely the general decline in the quality of movies over the years. Just to give you an idea of my speed, I've only seen three movies this year, namely Lincoln, Anake, and Hobbit. So that gives you an idea of what, my classical style, I suppose. But I think of a comment from the Los Angeles Times years ago, who years from now is going to be watching all of these forgettable movies? Time Magazine, January 16, 2012. Time, that's the, resembles Nouveau in that it always tells the truth, gives five reasons.
Ed Johnsonot likes that one. Thank you.
and of course, WFYI. Mission Impossible, box office is so bad, perhaps only Batman can save it. The Coroner has five reasons for its decline. Movies are seasonal. Stars are too last century. Sequels are sagging. Cartoons are crashing. And my favorite here, young men have gone AWOL. The young males are retreating to their games and social networks. Please comment.
We will. Thank you very much for the call, Rev. Well, there's an awful lot there. There's a veritable smorgasbord.
We didn't talk about McMovies because we didn't need to. I mean, the movies that are just product, we don't even address.
No. Yeah. Look, every year there is McMovies. Every year there is independent films, good independent films, and then there's stuff in between. So if things aren't working well at your multiplex, look elsewhere. Go to the arts, the cinema. Find out what's available online. There's more access to movies now at home or at a theater than I think ever before. So mm-hmm. I kind of disagree with Rev on the decline. I think you just have to look a little harder and look beyond the obvious sources.
And safety not guaranteed, the perks of being a wildflower. Documentaries like Searching for Sugar Man or The Other Dream Team. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful little things out there. Just don't go by what you're seeing advertised in primetime. Go look a little further.
Exactly.
Well, and do we tend to romanticize the films of the past? I mean, in the
studio
system,
there were cruddy films made during Humphrey Bogart's time, too.
We are talking about movies here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Steven, welcome to the program.
How are you doing?
Doing well. Your question, please.
I think it's Engagement with Adrian Brody. It was a little film about him being a substitute teacher. I wonder if any of you guys had heard that. And, you know, it's like that safety not granted movie to me, you know, because they're little no-name movies. And I watch about five a week of all. I watch everything. And there's very few good movies like you guys say out there. I just wondered if you'd heard of that one.
Great. Thank you very much for the call, Stephen.
That's not what we said. But no, that is directed by Tony Kaye, the man who did American History X.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't think that got a theatrical release because he likes to combat with Hollywood whenever possible.
He gets offended real easy.
Very easily. So, but no, I've seen it on the DVD shelves. And Adrian Brody doesn't always make the best choices, but I think he makes fascinating choices, especially when he's not doing Razor commercials. So, I'll add that to my watch list.
And have you seen it, Ed?
No, I haven't either.
Okay. We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. Greg from Indianapolis, who wants to know who you guys think are going to win the Oscars.
Somebody. A film, an actress, sporting actor, supporting
actress. Let's take it somewhat seriously. Best film of the year.
I think Lincoln's got a real good shot. Zero Dark Thirty. Silver Linings Playbook is going to get a nomination.
Probably a screenplay somewhere.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be Argo. I think that's another one that screams Best Picture. Cat, mm-hmm. Is possible. We'll get nominated. I don't know about winner. Probably Lincoln because it's historical and it's important and it's got Daniel Day Lewis and it's got Steven Spielberg attached and Tommy Lee Jones. Tommy Lee Jones was great.
He's
in
great.
That film. A lot of really good performances in that film.
And Best Actor this year.
Daniel Day-Lewis
is going to.
Yeah, I would have given it to Bradley Cooper for Silver Linings Playbook, but Daniel Day-Lewis, I think, is almost a lock.
Yeah, he's really good in it.
The man knows how to pretend, doesn't he?
Yeah. He does, and the fact that he picks and chooses what he wants to do. He's not doing the obligatory one film a year. He picks and chooses
like
what he wants to do.
How long had it been since last time he?
There Will Be Blood. No, he did There Will Be Blood 9. Before that, it was several years. I think he's worked with Scorsese a couple of times. So, fascinating.
And Best Actress?
I would go for Jessica Chastain for Zero Dark Thirty. We had a big argument about this at our critics group meeting.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she does a remarkable
job.
She's
so good. It's not the... She's not the... At the beginning of the film, she's not the plucky, spunky, new girl on the block who's, trying to fit in with the boys. And then on the flip side, she doesn't turn into Sigourney Weaver or Linda Hamilton at the end of the film. It's a really, really good performance.
She's somebody who came straight out of school, and her first task was hunting for Bin Laden. And she lets that define her to the point that... Once the mission's over, what do you do now?
Yep.
We have gotten some comments via Facebook and some tweets.
Great comments and listeners, by the way.
Thank
you.
Yeah,
this is, well, it's clear. They, one of them says, and this is actually funny, Robert via Facebook says, Battleship was a comedy.
Sure.
You look at it that way.
Okay.
They hit every cliche right at the time you see it coming. Okay, so was Cabin in the Woods for action to some degree. Now, Matthew Soucy, I know you disagree with that because Cabin in the Woods.
No, I laughed a lot at Cabin in the Woods, but it was because I'm usually not a fan of the Freddy Krueger-esque jokes, quips and one-liners in a horror film because that, for me, releases the tension. But this is a film that had equal laughs and equal scares, but it was intentional. And no, I enjoyed that a great deal.
And then we've gotten an email from a listener named Jerry who's praises Lincoln, says it deserves a public service award, but then also says that The Hobbit is somewhere between very disappointing and utterly disappointing.
Isn't that film ended yet?
Yes, your reaction, have you guys, Ed Johnstone?
I made a rule this year that if I wasn't writing about a film and I didn't want to see it on a personal level, I wasn't going to make myself see everything, and I didn't want to see The Hobbit.
We've been talking about movies here on No Limits. We will be back soon. Please have a pleasant holiday season. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Radio, 90.1 FM, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.